Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer. Hello, Richard.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Good. You're a short timer these days.
Yeah. Dead man walking.
Dead man walking. We're going to get rid of him in a month. We'll talk about that. And his replacement will be Michael Shackelford, who is actually here tonight to talk about football props and many other things. So we'll be talking to Michael in a few minutes, although he may jump in at any time he thinks there's an opportunity. So, anything? Did you take money off your brothers-in-law over New Year's?
You know, New Year. My wife's mother's birthday is January 1st.
It happened this year again?
It happens every year, and my wife is one of 10 children, and all of those children have children, and some of them even now have children. So this is a huge party every year for the family.
Sounds like a good time to gamble.
It is, although unfortunately my mother-in-law was in the hospital this year, and so is one of my brother-in-laws. So we did have a party, but I was spending time over at the hospital visiting, and so I did not get to play. So now this is you know, $30 worth of EV between Christmas and New Year's where I didn't get to play.
Are you letting your mother-in-law know how much she's costing you?
No. She feels guilty enough. I mean, she kept trying to get out of the hospital bed to go home and cook.
She's not Italian, but it sounds like an Italian mother.
Yeah.
All right. So, an interesting piece of news. I'm not sure how much it has to do with Gambling with an Edge, but there's this man named Dennis Hoff who runs brothels and something like five of them. And is starting up a new one near Area 51.
Right.
What do you hear about this, Richard?
Just the Alien Brothel.
It's Alien Brothel.
It's supposed to be 90 miles north of Vegas, up near Area 51.
Uh-huh.
And it has, I don't know if they're importing women from other planets or what the story is going to be there.
You don't know what it's going to cost to get it on with a Klingon.
Right. Uh-huh. And apparently Heidi Fleiss is involved somehow. She's the marketing director or something, or I don't know. It sounds more like gambling with your life to go up there than...
I'm not going to go up there, but it does sound like an interesting topic. So it has to do with loosest, you know, being loose. And I heard our guest, Michael Shackelford, earlier talking about loose slots and as it was done at the Las Vegas Club. So this is an interesting segue. But Michael, what did you hear about the loose slots at the Las Vegas Club?
Well, Happy New Year, everyone. One day I was walking through the Las Vegas Club.
I'm sorry.
Well, on my website, I indicate blackjack rules, craps rules, and roulette rules in every casino in Las Vegas. And once in a while, I go downtown and visit every casino and check up on their rules and see if there's any new games and see what's up.
That's an important thing for any player to do, actually. I mean, you never know when you're going to walk into a casino and find that they're giving away money.
Without a doubt, scouting is valuable. It's easy to ignore, but whenever you do it, you learn valuable information, without a doubt.
Yeah,
amen. So they had signs, which are still there, all over the place that said, downtown's loosest slots. And I didn't like this. And I thought to myself, how do they know they're the loosest when the Gaming Control Board only states a downtown average for you know, all the casinos combined? And so I went to the cage and I inquired about this, and they referred me to somebody else who eventually showed up, and she said, no, you have to talk to the slot manager, and he'll be here on Monday. So I tried three times to get in touch with, I think his name is Jack Buddy, the slot manager there, and he ignored me all three times. So I eventually wrote a letter to the Gaming Control Board citing a gaming regulation that said casino advertising is supposed to be honest, and I felt that I questioned the honesty of this claim, and I thought that the consumer should be entitled to see evidence backing this claim if it was requested. And the gaming called me like four different times asking me questions about this, and they said they could not tell me the results of their investigation, but they said they would indeed conduct one. And shortly after they said this, I went in there and taped over the word loosest, you now find the word best, which is good enough for me. And it's still like this to today. You know, so kudos to the Gaming Control Board. I think they did the right thing.
And that's not false advertising. Having the best slots downtown is not...
I think every consumer knows that best, the word best is meaningless at this point. So, you know, there's still some connotation to loosest. But, you know, I've noticed that when you see gaming people interviewed on these television shows, usually on the Travel Channel, the one thing that they always mention is, we make sure if a casino says that it's 97% payback, that it's really 97% payback. So this was right up there, you know, what they like to advertise is what they do.
Well, good. So, Michael, you have provided a public service. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Now that we were talking to Michael Shackelford, the Wizard of Odds. His Wizard of Odds name, I guess, is a pun based on his actuarial skills. He's published widely on a number of gambling and other subjects, and he was the very first guest on Gambling with an Edge almost a year ago, and tonight marks his fourth visit. It's probably only fitting that in 4 weeks he'll shift from being a regular guest to a co-host. Michael Shackelford, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thank you very much. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm happy to be a regular co-host starting February 2nd.
All right. So we're and I'm actually looking forward to that, although I'm not looking forward to Richard leaving. I actually enjoyed having Richard on the show.
You know, I've enjoyed it a lot too. It's real, and I have a lot of mixed feelings about leaving. If I were living here in town, I would definitely continue. But you know, to drive the 280 miles each way every other week, you know, I feel like the show suffers when I'm doing it over the telephone. The quality of the audio is just not very good, hopefully when I move back to town, I'll get back into it.
Well, good. If I'm still involved at all with the show, which I hope to be, you have a standing invitation. And, of course, Michael may have his own show at that point. You may have an invitation to do two shows.
Yeah.
So Michael, beginning in a month, you're going to be co-host. So that's going to come with a full vote on how we tweak the show, how we keep it the same, and how we make it a little bit different. So, assuming you did have this full vote, how do you think the show will be different in 3 months than it was 3 months ago?
What I'd like to do is diversify the topics a little bit. And, for example, I'd like to bring in some average people that work in common Vegas professions like, say, a casino host or a blackjack dealer, cocktail waitress, and talk to them about how did you get into this profession, how does one rise up in the profession, how do you get good tips, do you have any advice on etiquette for the players, and you know, hopefully the people that are considering maybe getting into these professions might learn a thing or two. And you know, I think it's a nice to get away from gambling once in a while.
All right, so once a month or so, maybe talk to a casino worker.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. Okay, good. Well, we shall see how that works out. Now, tonight, our subject is football propositions. Now, in general, what's a proposition bet, and how do they differ from normal bets?
A proposition bet is something that is resolved based on something trivial about the game. For example, will the first score be a field goal or a touchdown? Will Peyton Manning throw an interception? The total number of rushing...
I'll bet the no on this week.
Very funny. Things like that. And I will study these proposition bets very carefully.
And so how has that been going this year so far?
Unlike past years, it's been a tough year. Two of my favorite props are the one I just mentioned, will the first score be a touchdown or not? And I like under 3.5 field goals. And my props are based in part upon the fact that the last decade, the average number of field goals per game was 2.98. And I factor in other things besides that, but this is, you know, very important when I calculate what should be the fair line.
Do you divide different teams differently, or are there some team? There must be some teams that kick more field goals than others.
And outdoors versus indoors, stuff like that.
To be honest, I don't put a lot of stock into the particular teams. I think that field goals are not as correlated to things like the stadium and the weather as people think, and. You know, and furthermore, during the regular season, there are so many games that it would take too much time to overanalyze it for, say, a $500 or $1,000 bet. But I do factor in the total and the point spread. The greater the total, the greater the number of field goals you're likely to see, and as well as the spread. In a lopsided game, actually, it's negatively correlated with a high spread. In a high spread game, you're likely to see fewer field goals.
And by total, that's what they call the over-under number.
Yes, the over-under.
All right. So
why has this year been bad?
This year has been bad because in the regular season, the average number of field goals per game was 3.27. Now, you might ask yourself, is that due to chance or is that due to something being just different about the game? And I calculated that the standard deviation based on the number of games played in the regular season and everything was that the 3.27 this season is 2.68 standard deviations above expectations.
That's like 1 in 300 or something?
Yeah, 1 in 272. So I don't think it's chance alone.
But wait a minute. 3.27 is still less than 3.5. If you're betting under 3.5, you should still be winning those bets, right?
I was, but you have to lay anywhere from 150 to 250 on that bet. And
why isn't
so
this
I was
an 11 to 10 on either side, over under 3.5?
Oh,
right?
Prop bets are often not 110. It's often like plus 300, minus 400, whatever the odds dictate. You know, supply and demand. So you'll see them all over the place. For example, one of my favorites is the no safety, where, you know, if you bet the yes, you're probably going to get about 6-1. And if you want the no, you'll probably have to lay 8 or 9 to 1.
And a fair bet would generally be 15 to 1?
A fair bet would be about laying about 20 to 1.
Wow. That seems like a huge edge.
Yeah. The percentage of games with a field goal is about 5. A safety.
Uh-huh.
And so laying 10 to 1 is a great bet. It ties up a lot of your money, but you know, I bet that one every single year.
Now, is there some book that when they're trying, they're taking a huge rake, right, with these kind of ridiculous spreads? Is there some book or books that are much better that give you a better deal on these spreads?
They're more or less the same. As you pretty much see 30-cent lines if it's close to a 50-50 kind of thing. Let's say it's an evenly matched game. There might be a prop on team to score first. Then it's probably going to be -115, -115. If it's something that's more lopsided, then it might be +300, -450. So there's a big spread there. They definitely take more juice out of these props, but I still find them to be a good bet because the general public is betting the overs almost all the time. So it often creates value on the unders.
So if somebody, now you knew that the average field goal number was 3 over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Now, most of the listeners to the show would not have had that number at their fingertips. So players looking for an edge in the casino without specialized knowledge, and they want to bet on props, you've indicated probably no betting, no safety would be good. Are there any others that are almost always good without any kind of specialized knowledge?
Well, yeah, first let me agree with you that to calculate what a fair line is with a lot of these props requires a lot of homework and a big database of data, which I have. However, as I said earlier, well, I didn't say this, but when I bet the Super Bowl and I look at the list of hundreds of bets that I've made, almost all of them are going to be under some number or something not to happen. I always want a boring, uneventful game, and I figure it's because the square bettors are betting the over probably 90% of the time, and it's the sharp bettors that are taking this stuff the other way.
But if they were going to bet, well, I'll say if Aaron Rodgers is in the Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers is going to throw for 300 yards over and under. Now, you say it's usually betting under the 300 would be the better bet, but that has to be, there has to be some number at which the over is better.
Let me give you, here's my basic strategy of betting props.
Okay.
Number one, bet unders. Number two, shop around. I think that's all you need to do.
Wow. And is it true that in general you bet dogs rather than favorites?
Yes. And absolutely. For example, with a bet like team to score first, you definitely are probably going to be betting the underdog. And in things like pitting two players against each other, where there's a point spread on the worst player, like who will have more touchdowns or touchdown passes or touchdown receptions, and they're giving, you know, say a half to the worst player, bet the worst player.
Hmm.
Underdogs, yeah, and that goes for regular season betting too.
Now, do you ever parlay these things so that, I mean, look for correlations so that you can parlay events together?
I wish. parlaying props is strictly prohibited in the casinos, unless sometimes they will do parlay cards, but I have never seen one where there was good correlations. Now, one time a casino in Lake Tahoe had a horribly correlated parlay card, and they got killed over it, but this was years ago.
Like, correlated would mean one of them was who would score first in the first half, and another one would be who would score first in the game, and those numbers would likely be the same team? Is that what you mean by correlated?
That's a good example, but this casino in Lake Tahoe that had the bad parlay card is they had on a team to win the first quarter and team to win the first half, and those are likely going to be the same team.
Right, right. Now, what about when it's a bet where it's not an either-or, where you have maybe five different options?
Who's going to score the first touchdown?
Yeah, and maybe there are five or six different players listed, right? Are you looking for the longest odds? Or?
In my opinion, they take so much juice out of those props where there's lots of possible outcomes that it's not worth it. And furthermore, I don't consider myself really strong with the player props, like player to score first. I do know other sharp prop bettors that are very good with those things, but you know, again, if there's a whole bunch of choices to choose from, it's like betting the futures. There's like a 40% house advantage, and that's just too difficult to overcome.
Now, were you saying that betting at any of the casinos is the same, or are there some casinos that you think generally have a better deal for props than others? And if so, what makes them better?
What makes a good prop casino is, number one, high limits. For example, the Hilton is fantastic with $2,000 limits on props, whereas most places will be $500, maybe $1,000. the Harrah's or Caesar's casinos are really low. Like they limited me to $50 2 years ago. $50 maximum bet on a prop. That is kind of sad. But no. So props to the Hilton for good prop limits. $2,000. And another good thing is a good variety. And the Hilton has about 10 pages double-sided of props. So they have a better variety than anybody else. Other good places are the MGM Mirage casinos. They have a good variety. And a $1,000 limit on most of them, but on the real popular ones, it might be $2,000.
Now, which is Cantor Gaming?
Cantor Gaming is they do the M and the Venetian
Palms?
And the Cosmopolitan.
And the Palms?
No, I think the Palms is affiliated with the South Point now.
Palms has moved this year from the South Point to Cantor.
Well, I stand corrected then.
And they're good or bad?
They're good. They have a pretty good variety, but the good thing about them is the limits. They have high limits. They're not afraid of action. And that goes for the regular season as well. They definitely deserve a lot of respect.
Now, you were saying that having a 30-cent difference on close bets, such as each or minus 115, is typical. Do you ever find them with minus 20 cents or something, so it's only minus 110 on either side? And if so, a smaller rake would seem to be a good deal. Does that happen, or is it just no?
Generally, with the things that are close to 50-50, is just about everyone will be a 30-cent line. However, as it gets spread apart further, for example, let's say that you can get plus 300 on the no on something. Some places might be minus 450 on the yes. Some places might be minus 5 or minus 550. So there's definitely a range in stinginess when it comes to the long shots. And the Hilton, another good thing about the Hilton is they're not that stingy. They don't take as much juice out compared to the other places. And as I recall, the Cantor was a pretty generous one too.
Now you were talking about $2,000 being a big bet in props. Now, if you're just going to bet who's going to win or what the over under is, a player can get 10,000, 20,000, much bigger numbers. Why are the prop betting numbers so much smaller?
Because the casinos are risk averse, and
which just seems crazy.
Right.
You're in the gambling business and you're risk averse. It just
I mean, it's not just sports betting. You see this all the time in other things as well. But anyway, I think it's because the recreational prop bettors are not betting that much. Probably most of bets are probably $100 or less. Mm-hmm. And there's probably not really a need to go much higher than that. I think that they probably would say that if they increase their limits, it's only going to attract the bets of the sharp players.
Okay. Which is probably true.
Are there any websites that list the current lines for props?
I often go off of Pinnacle for what the market rate is for just about anything in sports betting. However, you're going to get much better lines here in Vegas on the props because there's so much more square action.
You can shop these online, right? You don't have to go like the old days, get out of your car and run into every place to check these things nowadays.
You do.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
There's nothing like Vegas Insider that tells you the going line on the team to score first or anything like that. No, you have to do your footwork and shop around. And it happens all the time that you make a bet and then you go next door and find a better line. And there's just nothing you can do about it.
You mentioned Pinnacle's an online casino. Now, the current
sportsbook, online sportsbook.
But the current assumption is it is illegal for Americans to frequent these online sportsbooks.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to get down bets at Pinnacle or somewhere, and how do you do it?
Okay, well, I mentioned Pinnacle because for lots of things, they're a good source to get what is the market line on something. However, Yeah, about 4 years ago, Pinnacle decided to get out of the American market, and they closed all the American players' accounts and sent them their money. However, it's not difficult for a U.S. player to get back on Pinnacle through what's called an agent. And the agent is basically using Pinnacle as a service for the player to put in a bet, what he wants to bet on and how much, and chances are the agent is going to be the one booking the other side of that.
So you get the sharp line of Pinnacle, but not the guarantee of being paid by Pinnacle. So it's kind of the worst of both worlds there. So if I were to look on Pinnacle and see that some prop bet is 10 to 1 on Pinnacle, and I walk into a casino and see I can get 20 to 1, that's probably a good bet for me?
Yes. I don't think that you're going to see such a disparity. But
so the bigger the disparity from Pinnacle, the better it is.
That would be a good generalization.
Yeah, okay. So now I have to ask about this just because of my, love of the entertainment industry.
Uh-huh.
I noticed that there's a lot of betting going on the Oscars. So mm-hmm. Is this something you bet?
Yeah, every year. And my basic...
You bet real money or real recreational money?
Oh, I bet real money, and I bet quite a bit of it. And the basic strategy when it comes to betting the Oscars is really...
Bet the favorite.
Yes, it's the opposite of sports. It's bet the favorite. And usually the winner of these things is pretty much known in advance. And, you know, sometimes it's kind of a toss-up, but you know, lots of times, you know, you'll have to lay 10 to 1 on something, but, you know, you can consider it a sure thing.
Well, I just noticed...
Wait, there's Best Picture, there's five people, and if you want to bet the favorite, you have to lay 10 to 1?
Well, right now, I mean, I'm not talking about a sports book now. I checked Intrade. Now, Intrade is a market that is at some university in the Midwest, Iowa, Ohio, one of those places where they grow corn. So they have a market where you can buy and sell contracts. And I noticed that right now the Artist... Is it about even money to win Best Picture? So it'd be interesting to compare that to what the sports book have it at. Have you started shopping your Oscar lines yet?
Well, number one, you can't bet the Oscars here in town.
Oh, okay.
There was a recent decision that says that the sports book can diversify and bet on non-gambling things, but so far nobody's done it. So you're pretty much stuck with betting online when it comes to the Oscars. And I would stay away from anything that's not a long shot when it comes to the Oscars. You know, you want to bet on stuff where, like, Charlize Theron to win Best Actress when she played the movie where she was...
Oh, yeah.
The
serial killer?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just
a lock.
Yeah, a lock. But you want to bet the locks. And yes, you know, it's tough laying 10 to 1, but, you know, I have... The biggest upset I have ever had betting the Oscars was Brokeback Mountain. You had to lay about 4 to 1, which is enough for me. And they lost. Crash won that year.
Oh.
And by the way, I thought Brokeback Mountain was a much better movie, so I don't know what got into the Academy with that one.
Yeah.
Well, even though you win most of them, if you're laying 10 to 1, you don't have to lose very often to have a bad result.
Yeah, that was virtually the only bet I've ever lost with the Oscars. And I still had a winning year that year from all the other ones, like Best Actor, Actress, Director, Supporting Actress, so on and so forth.
When I was a dealer at the Castaways, they had in town at the time, their famous sports book was called the Hole in the Wall Sports Book. And at that time... who shot JR was the big question. And they put up lines on who shot JR and started taking bets. And the gaming control board came in and said, you're not allowed to take bets on non-sporting events, and made them take it down. So that was, I don't know, back in about 1980 or 79.
Killing people in Texas is not considered sporting?
Yeah, it is if you're Dick Cheney, I guess.
Okay. So, now your website is been sponsored by Bodog.
Mm-hmm.
Bodog sort of changed its name to Bovada, something like that. So now it's. So what is that all about?
Okay. Previously, Bodog was actually two Bodogs. There was one that serviced the American and Canadian players and another one that serviced the rest of the world. And for all intents and purposes for American and Canadian players, it's just a name change. Bodog, North America, became Bovada. And in case you're wondering, you get the Bo from Bodog and the Vada is from Nevada, as if they were here. And the servers and the staff are still all out of Montreal, and it's it's basically the same thing, just a different name.
So if you were to sign up for Bodog Poker, I mean Bovada Poker, mm-hmm. and you go into the poker room, is that a skin that – are you sitting down at players that are also in Europe and the rest of the world, or is it just North America, Canada, and U.S.?
I would imagine that you are just with North American players.
Ah.
And I've been to the server farm there outside of Montreal, and so I'm pretty sure that all the players are sitting there in that same server room. So I don't see the reason why they would need to mix players from the two different organizations. But then
just
again, I could be wrong.
Going.
I wasn't expecting the question.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I like that's been in the news a lot the last couple of months is Bodog is the first company that has taken it upon themselves to cut out the data mining companies so that their players, they don't allow you to buy data on all their players so that when you're in a poker game, the guy knows exactly, you know, how many times you fold before the flop and how many times you go to the end after you've called the flop, those kind of things. So I think that's much better for the majority of players.
Absolutely. I really applaud them for that. Playing poker online is tough due to players that have access to enormous databases, and they know exactly how often you fold pre-flop and various other statistics about your play, and you don't know it about them if you're just a recreational player. So it's extremely unfair, and the average player really has no chance against these skilled players that have so much more information. So if I were to run an online poker book, I would absolutely do everything to not allow that. And hope, by the way, I hope that now that internet gambling or internet poker looks like it's going to be legal here, I hope that the state will take a stance against that.
That'd be good. I don't know if they're going to call for public testimony on that. Are you likely to be called in Nevada to testify or something as an expert?
If I'm asked, I would be happy to offer my suggestions about how to make online poker in Nevada fair and a good value for recreational players.
Yeah. You know, I was very much involved in internet gambling and prior to end of 2006 when the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act came out. And I always I was very happy that you back then were working with the software companies sort of as a watchdog, keeping them honest. I think you were also helping to develop games and stuff like that. So if it comes back, I would hope that you would be involved again in, you know, knowing that the software is dealing a fair game. You know,
I would be happy to entertain offers by any company interested in getting into the market about watching over them and to make sure that it's done well.
Well, good. This Gambling with an Edge is turning into a job interview. So this is good. Although he's well qualified.
Not that we can hire him. Yeah, not that we can hire him for anything.
That's good. There was one prop question that I had that I forgot to ask before we moved on to another subject. So let me go back to there. On normal football bets, you have these touts who sell who's going to win. Every week they have a game of the century, and every one of these touts on the radio have these 90% win rates or something fantastic. If you listen to what these guys on the radio say about how often they win, sport books are losing through their ear every week, but somehow the sports books survive. Now, are there any touts that you, on for prop bets that you know of and could recommend?
No, I don't know of any.
Long
at all.
Question, real short answer. You don't know anybody who?
No, I don't know of anybody offering the service because I think that the limits on props are so low that, you know, most people would feel it's not worth the investment.
And actually, how big is your edge? Like, if you have a $2,000 prop bet, how big do you think your edge is? I mean, what's your EV on that bet?
Well, you know, in earlier years, I was comfortable saying that my advantages were probably in the 5 to 10% range, but it's gotten worse through the years. Is I think that there's more competition from other advantage players doing this. And last year, I think I perceived my advantage overall to probably only be about 2%. And when you consider all the effort of running all over town, checking lines and analyzing the bets, one could easily make a case it wasn't even worth my bother.
And then there was that damn safety.
Yes.
The damn safety?
The damn safety. Well,
that was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Maybe. When you're laying 10 to 1 on safeties,
yeah,
and you have, you know, $50,000 bet that you either win $5,000 or lose $50,000, then whether or not a safety happens can really affect your bottom line that
last
year.
Last year was the two-point conversion.
Was it two-point conversion?
Yes. There was a dreaded two-point conversion, which you normally have to lay about 5 to 1 against. And unfortunately, there was one. And had it not been for that, I would have done a lot better.
Now, we have about 6 minutes to go. You recently took a trip to South America. Did you find out anything that was interesting that you could share with us?
I went to Argentina and Uruguay. I did not notice any good advantage plays, to be honest with you. Most of the casinos that I saw in Argentina seemed to be at least partially government run or very heavily regulated. They were, rather the two in the Buenos Aires area I felt were kind of boring and just they're just simply for gambling. There was nothing fun to do. There was another one in Puerto Iguazu that was better, but in Uruguay, gambling is a lot more fun. If you're ever in Punta del Este, Uruguay, there's a magnificent casino called the Conrad, which is actually managed by Caesars. But don't let that scare you off. It's really a fun casino. I'm not saying you're going to get any great bets there, but it was a very fun, elegant, classy casino and the way I think a casino should be.
You know, I think that says a lot that you say it's run by Caesars, but don't let that scare you off. I mean, the perception of Caesars Entertainment, Harrah's Properties, I mean, really has really gone downhill in the last few years. It's a shame.
Yeah, there's definitely a perception, I think deservedly so, that they have been cutting corners right and left and
although now they want to build a big Ferris wheel behind the Imperial Palace. You see that project that they, I don't know who comes up with these ideas, but.
Yeah, I don't know much about that.
Yeah, doesn't seem like the best use of $100 million or whatever they're going to spend on it.
Well, I still play at the 7-star level and several times over, so. There are some plays, at least for.
But they don't get they don't have cash back the way they. With them, I guess it's mailers, but they don't have.
Some do. The Rio does send you a small amount of cash back, but mostly, local players, when they play big enough, can get. $2,500, $5,000 a month appearance money. And playing, it is possible to play sufficiently to keep those coming where your expected value is somewhat less than that, although you will have bad months along the way.
Yeah. And you get some cruises out of it too.
We do get cruises. And Shirley is a big fan of cruises, and me not so much, but keeping Shirley
Yeah, we all know keeping wives happy is the...
keeping Shirley happy is part of the deal.
That's positive EV, keeping your wife happy.
Yes, it's just sometimes the lack of negative EV is the same as positive EV. Let's talk about our sponsors. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. Double Points in January. We're going to be happening on Martin Luther King Day, which is Monday, January 16th. And some of the rest of the time. Every day between Sunday and Thursday, if you play 200 points, you can swipe your card and you get something. The top prizes are $50 in free play or $50 gas card. And you could get $25 of food. It goes down to a free coffee mug and t-shirts. But somewhere along the way is 2x points. So many players will get an extra 2x point offer sometime during the month. To me, that's far more valuable than $50 free play. Smaller players go, oh, I'd rather have the $50. But anyway, they have that Monday through Thursday until now, the end of January. The Palms has introduced a seniors program called Sterling Advantage for Thursdays. Today was the first day. The lines were sufficient that I declined to stand in line for the 45 minutes it would take me to get up to the front of the line. Some people who did got free play offers or double points or something. To me, I didn't want to do that. It was too long of a wait. You do get $4 movie tickets. You do get half price on the 24/7 cafe and the buffet. There are scratch cards, and there will be a drawing on the last Thursday of the month to give away some relatively small prizes. Play, earn, and win Monday, Wednesday, Friday. For tomorrow and next week is called the Keep It Warm theme. There will be hand warmers. There will be heaters. There will be AirPods where you can keep coffee warm or something. And starting the last half of the month, it'll be called Booze Cruise. So I don't know exactly what it is going to be there, but I suspect it's going to relate to adult beverages. There will be drawings in January. There haven't been in November and December, but there will be drawings starting next weekend, Friday and Saturday, 7 o'clock. You can start earning tickets at the unusual time of 6:46 p.m. tomorrow night, Friday night, and for the drawings on the following Friday and Saturday. So your drawing tickets do evaporate on Saturday night following the particular drawing, but they are there Friday and Saturday. You do have to activate it before 6:45 on the night you're there. But they are giving away to 7 people. They're giving away a little over $10,000. And in the normal kind of way that the Palms run their drawings. So that's what's happening at the Palms. So, Richard, who do you think our guest is going to be next week? And what would you put the over and under that he's actually going to be here?
Wow. Well, our guest is supposed to be Don Johnson again. The last time he was trying to call us from a satellite phone on an airplane, apparently, and wasn't able to get through. So this was his makeup date. So next week we have our fingers crossed. I'm going to start emailing him tomorrow every day, confirming and reconfirming that he's on for next week. So,
and remind us who Don Johnson is.
Don Johnson is the player that won $15 million in Atlantic City, taking advantage of a 20% loss rebate. We will get the rest of the story because all we've heard about is his wins. We haven't heard about the losses, so I'm curious to find out what his net was. Although we do know that he spent $200,000 on a bottle of champagne, according to one newspaper account. So it may be.
So even if he won $15 million, it might not be much left.
Yeah, that's true.
Although he had to be well healed. This was a particular thing. He he was betting $100,000 a hand at blackjack.
That's correct.
And I suspect the three of us in this room wouldn't be comfortable combining bankrolls and playing that big.
Right.
So,
right.
So you have to have a certain significant bankroll to do that. So maybe $200,000 for a bottle of champagne isn't such big money to those people.
I hope to find out someday.
Although,
you know, no matter how rich I were to get, I don't think I could see myself spending $200,000 on a bottle of champagne.
And you'd still appreciate winning $30 off your brothers-in-law.
Sure. Yeah, money in a home game is twice as sweet as money won in a casino.
All right. So in the following week, we've been talking to a poker player.
Right, Daniel Negreanu.
One of the more famous poker players.
Right, and he's as hard to get a hold of as Don Johnson, actually. He's, you know, all over the world. He's in Europe. He's in Canada. He's playing hockey. So he right now is on the books for the week after. But two other people that I've been talking to just within the last few days as possibles in case one can or can't make those dates, Johnny C., who ran the MIT blackjack team.
We got to ask him about the airplane.
And right. And he is up to come on, although we'd love to have his wife with him. She seems awfully busy and maybe hard to nail down. So
Lori is a treat.
Yes, she is. And then also I just heard back from Josh Axelrad, who wrote the book Repeat Until Rich. He played on after the MIT team broke up, a lot of those members went to another team, which in Josh's book he calls Mossad. They basically were responsible for burning out the big player concept here in Las Vegas. They would go into casinos and call in big players who would bet three hands at $10,000 or more if they were allowed to.
And casinos got pretty savvy at picking these guys out.
They got pretty savvy about basically not letting anybody that they didn't know come in and bet table max. And they pretty much completely burned out the big player concept here in Las Vegas for big money, anyway, for really big money. But then Josh wrote this book, which is really quite interesting. You can read a review on my website and
RichardMunchkin.com.
Yeah, and he, after his blackjack experience, he started playing internet poker and became a degenerate gambler and basically lost all of his money playing internet poker. So, and I just happened to see he's a writer now. I just noticed he had a column in the Daily Beast yesterday about internet gambling.
The Daily Beast?
Yeah, the Daily Beast is it's a internet news gathering source. I think they own Newsweek magazine. So it's just a news website.
Oh, I haven't heard of it, but good. So good. We'll definitely have Mr. Axelrad on maybe when you're still here or maybe when
these guests who's going to land.
All right, so maybe
but some good people coming up in any case.
Maybe it'll be Michael and me who to talk to Mr. Axelrad. So
or Don Johnson or
or Daniel Negreanu.
Yeah.
Good. Or all of those. Those sound interesting. All right. So Michael, since you haven't left the room and we have a few more minutes to kill, you're fair game now. So your website wizardofodds.com is a really impressive resource. So most advantaged gamblers use that resource at least some of the time. So what do people find on there?
Well, thanks for the kind words about it. The Wizard of Odds is a resource for the whole gamut when it comes to gambling, and it's not necessarily targeted towards advantaged players. My goal is to improve the level of skill of all players as much as possible. And because most players are recreational players, I think that that's where I'm doing the most good. And I want to turn players from the kind of person that flies by the seat of their pants to somebody who's at least employing basic strategy. And, you know, but there's plenty of information for the more skilled players out there. For example, I recently wrote an article about card counting the panda bet and the dragon bet in Easy Baccarat. And that has been discussed a lot. And I like to talk about props, as we were talking about. And you just never know what you'll find up there. I try to keep the content as current as possible.
I'll tell you what I found it really valuable for was when I was playing online casinos, and you sign up at a casino, and they've got 47 different games, right, in the casino. And you're trying to find the game that you're allowed to play to collect the bonus that they're giving you. And you have to find out what the house edge is and how to play it and all those things. And so it was a really invaluable resource in being able to look at all the games they offered and look at the house edges and the basic strategy, et cetera. So it's massive also. It's really huge.
The site's been up for 14 years, so I've managed to accumulate a lot of information during that time. And regarding the internet casinos is, although there are hundreds, perhaps thousands of them, most of them get their software from just a handful of companies. And what you can find on my website is you click on online gambling and then several different software providers, for example, real-time gaming or microgaming, and it'll tell you the games that they have, what rules do they follow, and what is the correct strategy for these rules in the house advantage. And so that can be valuable because these internet casinos often do not disclose all their rules. So I did the detective work for you, and sometimes you see an unusual situation or an unusual rule, and I will tell you how you should play those weird situations.
Well, I'm hoping that all that internet gambling comes back because it was certainly a tremendous thing for advantage gamblers.
Another thing your website did is you were a whistleblower when internet casinos went bad.
Yep, that's a major part of my calling in life. And the last time I was on the show, we talked all about the last software company that I busted for cheating. And it was not the first time. I have done this before. And if I get evidence that a internet casino is not playing fairly, I'm happy to conduct an investigation. And if I find that the odds are not standard or, what you would not encounter in a fair game, I take pleasure in exposing that.
It's much harder to prove in the live casinos, because if there are cards missing from the deck, by the time gaming gets there, they can be back. And as you mentioned, I think there's a policy. If you report something to gaming, they're not allowed to tell you the results.
Yeah, as I mentioned with the Vegas Club thing.
Yeah, which seems like a pretty bizarre rule. You would think that those things should be open to the public, right? They're a public agency.
I agree.
Well, early when Gambling with an Edge went on, we had Mark Liparelli, who is chairman of the Gaming Control Board, and maybe we can get him back and ask him exactly that. He gave some of his answers were good and some were a little bit evasive, but because he was a politician. But I thought that was good, and maybe we can get him back again.
I interviewed some gaming control agents for a television show I did, and one of them said, "Oh, I wish I could tell you the stories about things that have happened." And I said, "You mean what players have done?" They're like, "Oh no, the stuff the casinos do." But they wouldn't go into any detail.
Oh dear. All right. So we got 10 seconds left. So I hope everybody hits lots of royal flushes. Rich and I will be back next week, but Michael won't be too far away. We'll get lots
You've
of Michael
been
real soon.
To Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.